I think some of it's overblown. I think it's a nice news article to put out there. You read some of these reputable reputable firms that release an article, and when you're as an aviator, you read it and you're like, yeah, you're missing like 95% of the story. I always say, I go, I'm not real worried until they change the actual infrastructure of the airports. That's like,
right.
You still can't pull an airplane up to a gate without a pilot in it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Hello, Adam Juhan. So excited to have you on the show. We finally have this thing going, and you were one of the top guests we wanted to have on to talk about the state of the airline industry and everything. So how you doing, man?
Well, what an intro. Top guest you wanted to have on. You guys must have went through a long list and then said, well, I guess we'll settle with this guy. No, I'm doing great. We are in full press mode for shameless plug for TPNX, our conference on the 21st and 22nd of April. Tate was yes. Our guest last year, one of our vendors. Tate and I hit it off, and he was like, yes, I'm in. He came down, flew all the way from Honolulu to Orlando to participate, had a blast. He's coming back this year. We're super excited.
We'll be there again.
And it's going to be a much, much bigger event on our side, the same size event for our guests, our attendees. And we're really excited about hosting that event again, same place, Orlando International Terminal C Airport. It's a lot of fun. The light's beautiful, and we're excited.
I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, we're
excited. We're going to get into go ahead, Ryan.
So it's amazing. I mean, we have pilot recruiting in full swing. We have contracts going full swing. We have the regionals hiring. We have hiring bonuses. And here you are, you know, TPN, the pilot network, providing, you know, connecting those opportunities to those new pilots. And, you know, there might be some people listening that, you know, just follow the show for financial, real estate, investing and stuff. But mm-hmm. I think, you know, for those pilots and those who don't know the industry, you know, I think it's going to be fascinating conversation with you about just how crazy the demand is for airline pilots right now. And, you know, yes. Such a great opportunity that everybody has to get into the career. Because I know when I started, you know, I soloed basically on 9/11 and it was just sort of this like trough of a career, and then all of a sudden it just sort of emerged from the ashes, and it's done really well. So very, very excited about that. But can you just kind of just give our listeners just a really quick, you know, backstory on like what TPN is and how it started and kind of where it's at today, just sort of like a 1 minute or 2 minute background?
Absolutely. My pleasure to do so. So it all started, as they say, on a wing and a prayer. And I had, so TPN wasn't a business. It never was in the beginning. That was never the intent. I wasn't a businessman, not an entrepreneur by nature. That was not me. I was a young military guy who had served his time on the active side, reserve side, had an opportunity to go home in Milwaukee. And I took that opportunity and joined the Air National Guard in Milwaukee. And when I got there, or actually I should back up a second, before I went home, to give people just a general idea, and for the pilots out there, they're going to understand how much of an idiot I was. The regular people, the non-pilot types won't understand, but I was a moron. I did not prep myself very well for the eventuality of not flying militarily, let alone prep myself for the eventuality of not flying. And when I went from the reserves to the guard, I was going to go from a full-time job in the reserves to a part-time job, affectionately known as a bum in the guard. I had not gotten my commercial license because I got my ticket or I got my test done, but I never went and actually converted it into my ticket. So I had no commercial license. I was flying for the military, fat, dumb, and happy. And I realized, dude, you need to get your act together. And mind you, I wasn't like a 25-year-old kid, okay? I was a 31 or 32-year-old man.
What year was this?
2011, 2012. So this is...
Wow.
No, this is 2011 is when I did this. So I'm sitting there, and realizing, dude, I'm not smart. I've not cracked the code on what I was doing. And there was no information out there. Like the guys in my squadron are saying, hey, do this, do that. You know, I was learning osmotically by watching people and listening and just absorbing the information, but I wasn't taking any action. I was making good money as an air reserve technician, they call it, a civilian who worked for the reserves. I was living in Tampa, Florida, had a nice house, single guy, partied my rear end off and was just like, cool, dude. This is great.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah. So
you're kind of saying like, you didn't really know the deal with the airlines and how to get there and all that stuff. So it seems like most people nowadays, to this day, have some sort of family member or friends of family that is in aviation that sort of walks them through the process. And people that don't have that exposure have no idea that it's even a career option. So did you fall into that category?
No, not okay. I didn't have any family members in the aviation. My grandfather was a military man and he always wanted to be a pilot. So funny. And this is for those history buffs out there, this might actually be of interest to you. So when he volunteered to go to World War II, he went to the recruiting office and stood in the queue or the line and signed on this piece of paper. And on this piece of paper over here, you sign on that one if you want to go to the Army Air Corps. So he signed on that one. And they were looking for pilots at the time to go to the Pacific. So he went down, they would go down the list, and then they drew a red line. And anybody below the list, your infantry, and everybody above the red line, you would go to screen to become a pilot.
Wow.
And so essentially, like, you're talking about, all right, he was like 18, 19 years old. And I don't know how he would have gotten there. I know that they didn't require degrees to be commissioned or anything like that, but I think it was more just air crew in general, maybe going to be a door gunner in the B-17 or something like that. Who knows? But glad it worked out the way it did, or I wouldn't be here, possibly. So he ended up going to be an infantryman for the war. And then he commissioned with an associate's degree. And then he spent 40 some years in the military. And he took me as a kid and exposed me to aviation, specifically military aviation, very heavily. And I was drawn in from a very early age by him. So I was not interested in the airlines. Yes, I always thought it was cool. Like the first time I ever took a flight, you know, like the standard story everybody hears.
Right.
But I had no idea about the civil sector in any way, shape, or form, aside from when I got to the reserves, or I'd heard stories from people. When I got to the reserves and I had friends who were pilots at Northwest, because I was in Detroit.
Got it.
Detroit area. So I learned a lot just basically there. And I had a couple mentors, but the mentality has shifted heavily. And I'm sure we're going to get into that about, it used to be first airline that calls you, take the job and put the blinders on, boom, you're done for a career. That those days are over. That is long gone. Yeah. And it ain't coming back anytime soon, barring a black swan event, knock on wood. I won't knock too hard, so I don't get a mic knock or something. But anyways, fast forward, there I am getting ready to leave the reserves. I'm like, dude, I got to get my commercial. I got to get my ATP. I got to get this stuff done, knocked out. At the same, almost shortly after that point, I put my application in with Atlas. And I got a call for an interview after a golf tournament where I may have had a cocktail or two. And I got invited down for an interview after I did the phone portion. And I got all the information on the Monday on that Friday afternoon. So I remember I got the call. I got an email about 2 hours later. You're going to come you're going to come down sometime in the next month or something like that, whatever. And then on that Monday, I got an email back that said they're suspending all interviews at that point. So I was like, looks like, you know, back to doing whatever I'm doing. Also knowing that now I'm moving to Milwaukee and there's no full-time position up there for me. So I said, all right, what am I going to do? So I shotgunned somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 resumes out to every corporate part 135, anything that I could find that was located near Milwaukee area. I had a friend who was at Harley and he said, yeah, they're not hiring, but you know, whatever, try it. Cause they just hired somebody. And I was looking for contract jobs, anything I could get. Cause I really wanted to start the process somewhere in the world of aviation outside of what I knew. I was ready to make that leap and take that step that Indiana Jones did in The Last Crusade, where he steps on the bridge that's not there. I was ready to take that leap. And I got a call from this company called Flightworks. And lo and behold, they said, hey, when can you interview? And I go, I'm driving through Atlanta in a day and a half to move back to Milwaukee. And they go, perfect. We're in Kennesaw. Swing by. Do you have a top secret security clearance? I go, I said, do you have a secret? I go, actually, I have a top secret. And they go, even better. Show up, interview. You're going to start in 3 weeks. Awesome. I get home. I tell my guard unit, hi, I'm new. I'm starting a civilian job in 3 weeks. Is that cool? And they said, yeah, go ahead. So I did that, went through training, took about a month, got spun up in the mighty Beach 1900.
Oh, yeah.
I had never flown a prop outside of a Piston 172. That's the biggest airplane I'd ever flown that had a propeller on the front. And I only had an hour in that. I flew nothing but a 152 when I was in training and when I was getting my PPL.
Oh, my God.
And I go and I remember I look and I said, why are there six throttles in a two-engine airplane? I was like, what is this? You got to be kidding me, dude. This is silly.
It stops for ice cream. It's one's chocolate, one's vanilla, one's strawberry.
And that's, yeah, that's
Neapolitan.
Yeah. And they told me, they're like, hey, be fine. Yeah, it was like Neapolitan ice cream. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, all right. You got 2 weeks of training here. You're going to go over to Afghanistan. You'll be fine. All right, cool. Sounds good. So I get there. Have a really cool group, very eclectic group of guys that I flew with as well. And when I was sitting there for the first deployment, it was 67 days or something like that. And we were making good money and we were flying our butts off and we were doing some stuff that I had never done before. I mean, it wasn't anything exciting. Everybody's like, ooh, did you take Blackwater around, you know, Navy SEALs on board? I'm like, no, dude, No, it wasn't Jack Ryan. It wasn't anybody from any of the three-letter agencies. Unless you'd maybe a two-letter agency like Waste Management. It was the guys who cleaned out the toilets. It was the folks who were flipping burgers. It was people from all over the world who were working in Afghanistan as part of the contracting team out there.
Right.
And I enjoyed it, but I realized that this is not something I want to do for the rest of my career. And I really wanted to go to FedEx. That's why I always say TPN has been an epic failure. It didn't work. We've failed. By the way, for everybody out there who doesn't know what TPN is, the pilot network, it's a 30,000 member group of aviation professionals that truly believe on paying it forward and that rising tide raises all boats. It's not a competitive group. We try to bring the best out of every single pilot. It's not geared towards one sector of aviation. It's heavily military, but the reality is it's open to every pilot who's got a good attitude, who wants to bring the best to the industry and wants to change it for the better, not only for the pilots themselves, but the companies they fly for. And continue, like, not create, because we already have a safety culture within aviation, but to continue to grow that safety culture so we can continue to be the most trusted form of transportation there. There's the pitch, right?
I love that. That's a great mission.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, connecting the dots to what you do, that's just so powerful. And, you know, I love your story because it's just so interesting how now, like, new pilots that come in and it's like, you know, God, you get your hours and, like, man, you're like off to the show and here you are. I mean, I've heard all these crazy flying in Africa, flying in Afghanistan, you know, going over to Dubai, you know, just whatever it took to get the hours, you know,
right.
And that's still the attitude today, but to a lesser extent, you know, getting to where you ultimately want to end up and then having the options like you were talking about. I think that's so interesting how you're just like, oh yeah, you just took that Indiana Jones leap of faith and that was the airline you were dedicated to for an entire career. And now it's like, oh, you kind of have options. And this TPN brings people together to kind of explore what those options are and really make the best decision for you. So you don't end up in a miserable career, right? Yeah. Where you end up where you actually want to be. So that's incredible.
Well, and one of the things, so when I was sitting there and I made this little Facebook group called the Pilot Network, and I put everybody that I knew in it who was a pilot and a couple of people who weren't, just to kind of give it like the algorithmic growth. Now, by the way, this is in 2012 when Facebook and groups were almost non-existent. There was one really big Facebook group that had like 150,000 people in it. And it was some weird group that had weird postings in it about it would take stuff that was kind of, I don't know, icky to me, I guess, but like, I wasn't interested in that, but there was really no big groups. I remember a few years later, they used to have the commercials out there for Facebook groups. I'm like, yeah, I started that. That was like, but so I developed this group essentially to start with was to find folks that, I mean, it was 100% motivated personally. It was to find people I knew at FedEx and to ask them for letters of recommendation without sounding like a jackass. And I didn't know how. I asked my friends how to ask for letters of recommendation, but I wanted to get feedback from the en masse group of pilots that I knew. And on top of it, I wanted all the people that were in my same demographic, especially military peeps who didn't know anything about anything at that point, to be able to ask the same questions. And I've seeded the group with a few ideas and a couple writings here and there. Hey, what do you guys think about this? What do you think about that? And next thing I know is it went from about 350 people to about 1,000 people in a week, which I thought was kind of cool. And I remember one of the guys down the hall was a very good friend of mine. He goes, dude, what the pilot network, what's this? And I said, well, man, you know, I'm giving the spiel. And he's like, that's stupid. So dumb. About 3 months later, there's 5,000 people in the group. And I remember I went back out to do my second deployment, which I had to come back for a military thing. And then I started Atlas shortly after that. And I remember the second time I saw him, he goes, you remember what I said about the pilot network? I go, yeah. He goes, I don't know anything. You should never listen to me again. And I go, I never did, Chris. Don't worry about it. Your secret's safe.
I didn't listen to you, which is why I'm successful now.
Yeah. So then
that's our whole thing on the show, right? Is like, you know, we talk about investing a lot and pilots will say, oh, you know, never take investing advice from a pilot, you know? And it's like, okay, well, where should I go get investing advice?
Right.
Yeah. That's why we have this is we're bringing on people that are the experts to share that information. So anyway, love that.
So what happened then is a circumstances that I met a guy a year or so before that. His name is Matt Swee. And the funny part is we're both from Wisconsin. He's a KC-135 guy. I was a KC-135 guy in the military. We might've been acquaintances before, but I'd heard his name. We met at MacDill at the duty station in Tampa. And then fast forward a couple of years later, we were both deployed together and he came up to me. He's like, hey, Adam, how's it going? Blah, blah, blah. We started talking. He's like, I think that pilot network thing is really cool. And I told him, I said, yeah, you know, the thing is there's a lot of great information on it. And I go, but man, it's just inundating for a new person. Number one. Number two, I said, I'm trying to monetize it without monetizing the member. I said, the member is not the product. The member needs to be the focus point of what the pilot network is all about. Like the pilots are the people who go and find the product. I just don't know how to turn that into something monetary that we can take, maybe put a little money in our pocket, which for spoiler alert has not happened yet. But with that said, what can we give back to the community that we're a part of, which will then continue to grow. And someday in the future, this can turn into other things, not only for us, but for all our membership, whether that's the airline job of their dream, whether that's going and having passive income and understanding how to invest by networking with all these other folks, or just getting a leg up when you first go, you look up and you go, man, I'd really like to fly airplanes for a living. And you have a knowledge base of, instead of the four people that you talk to, it's 30,000 people around the world. And Matt really is. So it's very funny. We have a company that we're working with to help us with our marketing, social media, and everything else, kind of organizational piece of that. And they always said there's the kind of creative free spirit. That's me, who lacks the business sense and whatever. That's me.
Right.
And then there's your tech business guy. And that's Matt. Matt's the smart one who has got also the creative bone. That's where him and I really sync up together. But it's a lot of yin and yang. So Matt's, we're the co-founder of TPN as a business, is really the engine that drives the accomplishments that we've had throughout the last decade. And the thing that we look at it is someday, can we achieve a salary out of this, right? Like if we're going to talk dollars and cents, would that be cool? Yes, it would be really cool. But I feel that even though there's been down times where I was like, man, I am done with this at times, the enrichment that I've had with meeting guys like you, meeting people that I've met throughout the industry, both good and bad, I've learned a lot from that. Meeting folks who I've trusted inherently or who've taught me more than in 2 hours of sitting with them than that could get from anywhere else, that would have never ever happen without TPN. And the other thing is I don't know if I would feel as fulfilled with my aviation career if I wouldn't have had something else to trigger those things to keep me going. Because for those of you who aren't airline pilots who are listening to this, I'm going to have another spoiler alert. An individual who's been flying the line for 25 years is outstanding at their job. They know more about aviation than I know, but than I probably will ever know in my career. But if that's all they've done, a lot of times when you talk to them, they're looking for something a little bit different. In fact, I did a podcast a couple of years ago called The What's Next. And I think it's not just pilots who face the what's next. It's always you hit that goal and then you look for the next one. Well, as a pilot, a lot of times you can hit that goal really early in your life. And then you get into this doldrum where you just don't know what's next. My goal was always to be an Air Force pilot. I never thought that was going to happen. When that happened at age 24, I was a rudderless ship for the next 10 years trying to figure out what am I going to do next. And honestly, I just put it on the back burner, forgot about it because it was too hard to kind of look at that as an objective and as an objective to achieve later in life. And I think that's one of those things where when you start your own, when you hang up your own shingle and you start your own business, whether it's you or somebody else or your team, and we'll definitely talk about team building later, because I believe that's the most important part of this whole thing, is when you are looking at that what's next and that objective, it's good. As you get older, it's really hard to do it when you're young, I think. It was for me anyways. There's people who are way better at it than I am, that's for sure. But to reverse engineer that process, to look like, what do I want my life to look like in 5 to 10 years? Not what am I doing here specifically, but am I living on a beach? Am I a family man? Am I spending more time at home? Do I love being on the road? Do I want to just be out? Hey, if you're a guy who or girl who loves being out on the road and you want to travel for work all the time, maybe Atlas is your dream job. Maybe you want to be in that world where you're going 17 days a month and you only spend 2 months at home because, frankly, that's what you want to do. Those kind of things are what I wish I would have had that common knowledge a little bit, or that it's not so common, I guess, but that knowledge now back then, because we would have done things differently in the way we structured not only the business, but the infrastructure within the business to operate in certain ways to make us more maybe financially or fiscally successful as we moved forward. We're there now, but we would have gotten faster.
Yeah, I want to pull on that thread because I think that is like massively important.
Yeah.
So when you think about flying an airplane somewhere, what's the first thing that you decide?
Where you're going to go.
Destination.
Right. The fuel and the tire pressure and the pre-flight and all the checklists that go into a typical flight and the weather and the planning and all that all is secondary. And it really doesn't matter what that stuff is important. It's important to obviously get the plane to the destination, but really it's about the destination, right? And so I think when you're, I just love that, like how you got to, because I think that's such a blessing and a curse in the pilot career, because you have this goal. Right. And it's like, you know, I had the same goal where, you know, you're 16, 17, you're like, man, if I just get my private, my instrument now I got my commercial and now I got my CFI and oh my God, I got my college degree now. And it's six days after graduation and I'm at the airlines. Like, and now it's like major. And then once I hit the majors, it's like, holy cow, like that's it. And then you're like, now what? And
now what?
Then you have this, I think it's just amazing the opportunity you have to do something else. You know, or do nothing. But yeah. I think our listeners have the tendency to want to be the something else people. And I think that's where our guest avatar is that person. And so I think it's neat when you think about, okay, the world is whatever you want it to be. You just got to decide what you want your destination to look like, you know, hot weather, cold weather, mountains, flat beach, whatever it is. And then the rest sort of just kind of fills itself in with this thing. And, you know, what I kind of took the hard road and, you know, I started a business as well. We have over 100 employees. We have, you know, 65 or so for storage facilities around the country. But, you know, that was something that you could do with an airline career at the same time. And I think that's what's so cool. And anyway, I just love that. I just wanted to really highlight that part of your story. So
the other thing, not everybody thinks this way. And there's no fault in it or anything like that. I'm not passing judgment. I I can't. If I pass judgment, people can pass a lot on me. Yeah. All they got to do is look at my 20s and my early 30s and go, wow. But like the thing is the reality for Matt and I was we stole this line from Dave Ramsey, and for what people think about him, good or bad, doesn't matter. The line of, and the only businesses that we partner with is to have the heart of a teacher. And that is because Matt and I truly believe in business with purpose, with something that gives more value back to the client or the customer than they're actually paying you for. And I'll be fair and open and honest about that. It is something that we struggle with in the Pilot Network every single day that we talk. Are we giving enough value to the people that are out there? And sometimes we don't know what that value is, right? Like, how do you know the value of what 30 different thousand people's different opinions are? You have to take your best estimate and guess. And then also on the flip side, like for our TPNX, the conference, what value are we providing to that airline that shows up, that startup airline that shows up, that is looking for their first cadre of initial pilots that they're going to have? What value are we giving to them? And to us, that is something that is always kind of at the forefront of our mind. So once you kind of reverse engineer what you want your life to look like, if it's, you want to chase the dollar, go for it, man. I got no issues with that. And it's funny because I'm a big golf nut, and the whole LIV versus PGA thing that happened last year, for those of you who understand that, if you don't, go look it up, but it was a big, big debate. And these golfers who were at the end of their career or not making as much on the PGA Tour, or sick of playing for the tour, they left and they made gargantuan sums of money for a host of different reasons from a league that was backed by the Saudi Arabian government. Politics side, think whatever you want on that. I had no issue with chasing the money, right? Like, go for it. That's what you want to do. That just wasn't me. I guess somewhere along the way, I realized, I'm like, no, this is what I want my life to look like. And how does my life look like that? And where does the money fit in, instead of where is the money? And then I'll fit my life around that. Because I think it's like your house, right? The bigger your house is, the more stuff you're going to acquire to grow to that size. And if you have a family, you got kids, you know very well that the stuff will keep growing to outgrow your house. So you can always get a bigger place, but stuff is always going to fill it. So it's kind of like, build the house first and then figure out how you're going to put all the stuff in there. And then it, like, to me, that was a much more satisfying approach, or has been to this point. And that's the way I've always looked at TPN as a business. And then my own personal stuff on the side, because as Tate and I have talked many times, I'm getting into the real estate mode of thinking a little bit more. I've got the voice acting thing on the side, which is on pause while we plus the TPN stuff up. And then also I've got the airline and the guard. There's a couple other ideas that I have that I dabble in, but those are kind of the main focus points. Someday there's going to be something else, shiny object syndrome. I'm going to go chase that a little bit. And I just want people to understand that that's the mentality that I'm coming from. So when they hear the words, they can go, that doesn't quite fit the narrative of what I'm thinking about. Well, no, of course our opinions are different. So just understand that that's kind of my background, where my thought process is. And that changed over time. It used to not be like that.
So I want to unpack. I mean, there's so much to unpack there. I mean, the airline. Well, just like I know that Ryan experienced the exact same thing, because Ryan, I know your origin story. I experienced the same thing when I got to the major airlines. It was like the now what thing. But I want to kind of transition. I'm going to give you a quick like a lightning round here. That's just off the top of my head. I want to focus down on practicality and how to be applicable with this stuff, right? So if you are an airline pilot and you've got a nephew, niece, daughter, son who wants to get into aviation, how can they best interact with TPN in order to get value and understand the landscape better? Or if you know someone, or if you are not involved in aviation, right, whatsoever. So just baseline, know nothing about aviation. So someone who's a kid, teenager, whatever, that is interested in the aviation career, how do they interact with you? And then we'll keep going.
Okay. So I would say the easiest way is you just start by going to our website, which is the easiest, www.thepilotnetwork.com. From there, you can then join us via the Facebook group. We have a premium group, but for young professional or young types who are in students, if you will, we don't charge anything for that stuff. We want to build your career, because later on, the money comes later on. Like, we don't, right. don't care about that. You don't have money when you're new. So start there. And then what we do is we're going to connect you with all of those organizations out there. There's so many of them that, to the point where some people have a hard time deciphering that and they just quit. And that's what we want to avoid, because
I was going to say, how do you use the information if you're that person?
That's perfect segue, exactly where I was going next. So once we're able to distill your niche in life, where you are, where you are at, whether it's, and I hate to use these terms, but it's true, what your gender, color of your skin, all that stuff. There's an organization out there that will back you. And we want to get you with the right people, the right person who can more speak to your situation. So instead of you just Googling, how do I become a pilot? Come to us, and we have a condensed version of that. And then we have people who are going to guide you through with, we have written articles. I don't know how many blog posts there are now. We have a correspondent list that writes incredible work for that. We've got over 100 podcast episodes that give you ideas on all things, kind of the whole smattering of the aviation landscape, not only how to start, where you're at in your career, keep moving on. It's kind of the cradle to grave mentality. And then also, frankly, just reach out to one of us, Matt Sweep, myself. You can write, hey guys at thepilotnetwork.com on an email, and we're going to write you back. Like, we want to see the aviation career field move forward. And if that's not necessarily mean you want to be a pilot, well, I'm working with a young lady right now who wants to be an aerospace engineer, who we have nothing in common, but I know people that have a lot in common with where she started from in her life. And I'm going to put her with those people so she can skip the steps of, man, this is tough. Cause you have to earn your spurs and you have to have a little grit, but it's a lot. Let's accelerate the learning curve. Because if we can accelerate that, we get those assets as aviators to us sooner, which helps all of us out as an aviation community. If we got to wait, that just puts the brilliance a little further back. And we need right. that now that we Amazing. Need it now.
So it sounds like, somebody who is building their hours, maybe getting their first bit of turbine time at a regional, at maybe a national that wants to jump to a major. I mean, it's kind of the same roadmap, right? Come through the door and you'll find your path.
Yeah. I would say, so we'll take that type of individual right now who maybe they just finished a part 141 school and they're the 4-year hero. They're going to go and fly for a regional or whatever. Or they're going to go get a low time job. We want you to get that low time out of the way as fast as we can, so we can move you forward. And there's some rumblings out there that the industry is about to make a pretty drastic change across the board in how they are going to start looking at those lower time pilots. So
I know you can't, I want to get into the state of the industry and the pilot shortage, yep. all that stuff. But before we do, and we'll tie this all together at the end with TPNX and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But real quick on the applicability thing, what about a 20-year airline captain? If you're listening to this, yeah. you've been at your major for 20 years, why should they join TPM? What value can they bring?
Yeah. So that's always been the big question and the hardest one to answer. For us, we've realized that the 20-year airline captain, a lot of which lost a retirement, right? A lot of them have lost a retirement and are looking for ways to make themselves whole. And this is where the networking piece came in with you and I, Tate, right? Like, I remember when we talked about Turbine Capital, it was like, boom. I saw it was like, wow, what an opportunity. The fact that something like that existed, that was just dumb luck that I found it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would have found it any other way than just by total accident. I don't want that to happen to those folks out there. And to me, that's the area where we have the biggest room to grow and probably the fastest acceleration, is to get people in who have ideas that we've never thought of. I don't know how many guys and gals that I've flown with when I say, yeah, I do this, and then I've got the voice thing, and then I've got, and they're like, what? And I'm like, well, you can too. Like, you don't have to just have one modus operandi of how I'm going to generate income. And then when you do retire, there's all these other things out there, like all the tax burden stuff and how to reduce your tax burden. And then stuff that I don't even know how to talk about intelligently.
What's been the most, like, when you encounter those people, right? What, how do you get through? Like, what do you, cause it's mindset, right? It's 100% mindset. Everybody thinks they don't have enough time. Yep. They don't want to do it. It's too much work. I need a college degree to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the thing that you kind of like, what's your secret sauce and maybe breaking through to some people that can be broken through to, but.
Oh. yeah. Well, I don't know when I was the kid in school. I got to back it up. I lightning rounds never work with me because I'm
we're moving. It's like me. We like to talk.
I'm a slow moving hurricane, dude. You know, I'm coming 4 days prior. You got plenty of time to get out of Dodge. So,
I'm going to use that, by the way. That's really good.
Yeah, go for it. The way when I was a kid in school, I was the kid who blamed everybody else. The teacher didn't like me. The kids made fun of me, you know, whatever. I was a portly little guy. I had the husky size corduroy kind of a thing. And when I got older, and I think pilot training in the Air Force really knocked some sense into me that this is my fault. I did not do as well as I wanted to do in pilot training. And it was solely because, not because the instructors didn't like me. It wasn't because I couldn't fly the airplane. I could fly it really well. I did not have a good study basis from high school and in college. I figured out how to navigate the system better than actually work hard. And I didn't realize you needed both of those things to be successful in life. And I didn't take my own accountability. Jocko Willink wrote a book, Extreme Ownership.
Great book, by the way.
It's a great book. And I will say that if you can't adopt extreme ownership, just adopt personal accountability. Just basic accountability will get you so much farther in life when you just say, I screwed up. It was my fault. And even if it's not 100% your fault and you just take it and you move on to the next thing, and by the way, it works wonders in a marriage to just say, yep, it was my fault. I still struggle with that one on a daily basis. And you can ask my wife and she'll tell you the same, but
we're saving marriages across this great land.
Yep. That's what we do.
There's a saying I always like too. Like there's something that you can do one day, like maybe you're flying and you're thinking about doing something and you're like, one day I'll like get around to like writing that business plan or doing something, or one day I'll start a pilot podcast about investing, or one day this, one day that, or day one, where you start it. And it doesn't have to be like this massive thing that you do. It could just be like me and Tate having Tate and I talk every day. And so it's like, we have like a one day mentality where it's like, we just do something once per day that makes progress to where we're going. And so for somebody who finally finds that accountability, like you're saying, Adam, who goes, okay, well now what? I feel overwhelmed. One day, just move, take one little step forward on whatever you're thinking about doing.
And I have a really powerful little hack for this. It's called the minimum next step. So just what is the smallest 10 second, 15 second item that you could do to take a little tiny bite? Something as simple as call someone who knows something about this, put it on your calendar for whenever it is. And when that rolls around, now you got to do it. And then from there, what's the next little tiny step that needs to happen? Anyway.
So you know what's so hard about being a pilot? I'm going to throw people that are like struggling with this like a bone. I think like we are on our own. Like we are on our own. There is nobody teaching us, guiding us. Like we're on our own, right? Like you got your captain, your crew you're flying with, whatever, but they're not helping with your business necessarily. Like they're going and doing their own thing. Like it's lonely and it's hard. It takes that much more motivation to do something when you don't have anybody around who's helping you do it. It's not like you're going to an office full of people doing what you're doing or you're part of a network. And so I think that's what's so powerful about the TPN and podcasts and things like that, where we can all kind of come together as a community and like learn what each other are doing. And it's encouraging and it's affirmations of kind of what you can really do. Yeah.
So to answer your question, then add a second piece to that. So the way I kind of grab attention, I don't know if it works regularly, right? Like the opinion is your own reality, or your own reality is in your head. And, you know, that's maybe we all live in the simulation anyways, who knows? But the thing is the way I look at it is this. If I can tell somebody, hey, I barely graduated high school. I barely got into the ROTC. I was too overweight to enlist in the Air Force. And that's how I got an ROTC scholarship. And they said, so if I can somehow end up in the position where I am a retiring military officer who served 21 years. I got to a major airline through, I learned that work ethic through, in the sheer force of will through pilot training and through some military, other military stuff that I had. I learned it again when I screwed up and didn't have my commercial and ATP ready to go. Otherwise, I would have been at Continental back in like 2006. That would have been a huge difference in my life. I'd be driving down to O'Hare where I don't do that at my current airline. And the way I try to get them to not understand, but to believe in themselves that they can do it is I failed as a kid over and over and over again through my own inability to accept personal accountability, that this was not anybody else's problem, but my own. And then the second piece of that is when they say time or whatever, I totally understand. I have two little kids. And believe me, there's days where I do not want to come down to this little booth that I'm in studio and do my thing. There's days that I don't want to record a podcast. There's days that when I was getting ready to kind of launch the voice over career more full throttle, which again, I have to pause, which is a bummer because I love being behind the mic to do creative, but I can't. I would come down here and I would grab through advice I got from a really good studio person that I worked with, said, take random magazines, especially ones that you don't read, and go through and look at the advertising and read the tagline out loud and do it over and over and over again. Because, and then do your ABC reads in the acting world, in the voice world. ABC read is you read it one way once, you read it a second way, totally different, and then you read it a third way, totally different.
Interesting.
And run through those, and your reps are what's going to get you good. And that's the thing, is those reps. Now, I can do that in 5 minutes. And even that 5 minutes is sometimes super challenging. But if I drag my rear end down to my booth, if I come down here and I walk in and I sit down at the computer. Joe Rogan talks about it all the time. Whether you like him or hate him, it's one of the best pieces of advice is if you sit down and you try to do something, whether it's you want to write a book, you want to do a podcast, you want to tell a story, whatever it is, when you sit down and you just keep showing up, the muse will come and get you someday and they will take you for the ride. And if that's right. The case, and if it's true, and it seems to be so because it's worked for me and it's worked for a lot of other people, is if you just keep showing up, one day it starts to click. And then that 5 seconds, 15 seconds turns into 15 minutes, turns into 5 to 15 hours of work per week. And then it becomes, you can't not do it. You feel like, for those of you who are workout addicts, when you started,
you weren't
addicted to it. You probably didn't like it at all. But the more you keep showing up, the more it becomes part of the DNA of who you are. And that's how you change. Like, you can't really change your personality, in my opinion, but you can change all the things that make you up as a person. I used to hate working out. And now I just got back from the gym a little while ago and I was like, oh man, I'm kind of didn't feel like I got enough. I'm probably going to hit the basement gym a little bit tonight. And then tomorrow we got to push a little bit harder and I'll go run around with the kids, just get a little bit more. And that is what I want in all facets of my life. To a point where I'm going to have to start cutting things out, which I've had to do already. Cause it's like, no, there's time limits. And to understand that maybe you take one of those things that you love doing and you trade it for something that you hate doing sounds so awful, but if you just do it a little bit at a time, next thing you know, you love doing something that you originally didn't like at all. Mm-hmm. I hated real estate, hated it. I never, ever, ever wanted it. I was going to put it in an index fund, 7%, boom, done, didn't care, set it and forget it. Now, every morning, the first thing I do after I brush my teeth, the first thing I do is I look at my MLS email I get from my realtor and I look, is there a property that we can make an offer on today?
And then you invest with Tate.
And then I invest with Tate anyway.
There we go.
It's those small steps like, it's so funny that there's a book, right? Everything you need to know, you learned in kindergarten. It is so true. It is so true. You just take the baby step forward, and the next thing you know, you're sprinting and you can't stop.
Man, I just started working. Right. I started a workout routine a couple of months ago, and it's funny. I put a really dumb movie on, like something I wouldn't watch normally, as a way to treat myself doing something I like doing while I'm working out, which maybe not be something that I really want to go in full speed on. So love that trick. There's so
interesting, interesting tactic there.
Yeah. Like I'll put on like,
I can't imagine watching something really working out.
No, I listen to a podcast or listen to a book or things like that. But like now your mind is like really spinning, and then you're also doing something kind of hard, right? So like your body's getting hit like two different ways. I put on like like a Rocky kind of movie or something with Dwayne Johnson in it or something so ridiculous like
Roadhouse.
Roadhouse or something. And you just let it go, and it's great. So
that's amazing.
Anyway,
all right, switching gears here. Adam, there's nobody that has a finger on the pulse of the airline industry like you do. I want to run through, the state of the industry, the pilot hiring. We've never seen anything like this. I mean, in the history of aviation, we've never seen anything like this. And then, beyond that, how pilots are positioned at the bargaining table, all the new contracts that are coming out. How long is this going to last? So walk us through the state of the industry, what you're seeing in a historical context, and then what it just means to the average person, whether you're at a major or you're just coming up in the ranks.
Yeah. So I'm going to caveat this for everybody. My crystal ball got smashed years ago. So I don't have much of a look at the future.
One for you. The COVID supply chain disrupted the crystal ball factory from producing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Well, the one I had before that was made the magic eight ball look like it was 100% right all the time. So
there we go.
I will say that with the connections that I've been able to foster over the years through the pilot network, that the state of the union of the aviation world is bright for now. And again, this is all we live in a world, and I guess we always have. And this is for pilots, not the population writ at large. We live in a world where black swan events, they come, they go, and they normally decimate the industry for a short period of time or for even sometimes a longer period of time. But there's always been some sort of rebound. And the rebounds have been greater than they've ever been in the history of aviation, right? I mean, the projections of passenger travel are up essentially all over the world. Aside from a few countries who have yet moved past pandemic level things, but certain places like Korea, which was locked down for a very long time, is open, and there is nonstop movement with that part of the world, specifically South Korea. But as far as the hiring goes and the way it looks for all of us who are currently at a major, I would say that it looks fairly bright in that the contracts are going to come in the way that they're going to come. Like, again, I'm not super well read into negotiating committees and what each airline tact is to get their best contract for their pilots, specifically the unions. But the contracts that have come out are, in a lot of people's minds, obviously the voting record at both Delta and Alaska was pretty darn good. So a lot of the younger folks are extremely happy with what they are going to be making just monetarily, and not just considering work rules and all that other stuff, pretty good compared to what it was. Now, there's the old guard, and they have a lot of good arguments based on what was the airline industry at the end of the 90s, right? Like there's the talk about inflation. And how
can you share two or three things that you think are those big line items that some of the younger guys might not understand?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah. That's a great point. So like let's take, for instance, Delta just signed their contract, right? And there is a huge shift in the way that they're doing their work rules on reserve. They already had an outstanding reserve system by the opinion of most airline pilots. And then they got this 18-hour long call. And for those people who don't understand that, 18 hours that you can sit, you're basically on an on-call status by the company, and you will get notified of a trip 18 hours prior instead of 10 hours or 12 hours prior. And if you are called inside of that window, you actually will be essentially positive spaced to your location if you are a commuting pilot. And then there's some other stuff that's in there for folks who are not, but this is a huge monumental step forward for work rules and quality of life for individuals, because now they're not worried about, oh my gosh, if I get called, I have to, I could be in a bad spot where I can't get to my base to start my trip. If I stay home, I have to fly in earlier to wherever I'm located. So if I, for instance, if I was based in New York and I lived in Tucson, I'd have to go, you know, a day earlier or the morning prior to the day, even if I didn't get a call, those days are gone. That's a huge quality of life improvement. So quality of life is one, I would say, and that's just one tiny piece, but that's one. I would say monetarily, now there's all the inflation talk and all that kind of stuff, but monetarily, pilots are well compensated at the majors, have been for years. There was a period that was a downturn. And some folks would say that we're still not compensated to the level of what we're capable of doing for the individual. Also, you know, the whole backstory on people would say, do you want your family on board an aircraft that doesn't have a pilot that's not capable or not confident in what they're being paid or being compensated at their airline? Is the argument legit for some people? Yeah. For others, not so much. I think the pay though has come back to a level that you can have a great career at a major. You can retire very comfortably if invested correctly. And even if not invested correctly, you're still probably going to be okay. And you're a high income earner. And that, so the pay helps a lot for a lot of people. And then I think the third thing for me is that when you have labor peace at any airline, that's a good thing. Like labor strife is not good for either side. It causes a lot of confrontation in between the pilot group. There's subsects of the pilot group, the older folk at different airlines. There is, they can look at the younger group, because what's happening now, and this is the reality, is all of these airlines are skewing younger in their hiring demographic. This right. is the first time that we've seen this since maybe post-Vietnam, and the hiring boom wasn't as big because, or if it was, there was so many more airlines that were hiring, right? There were so many major airlines. I mean, Eastern, Braniff, Pan Am, Delta, Northwest, Continental, United. I mean, the list goes on and on. Essentially, there are four major airlines in the contiguous 48 states. There's Southwest, Delta, United, American. And then you have smaller JetBlue, Spirit, Allegiant, and then you have a host of other regionals and some other smaller carriers. But the reality is there's four major PAX carriers and there's two major cargo outfits out there. And UPS is a very small airline. FedEx is a lot bigger. And they have slowed hiring drastically, almost paused it for the time being. So the reality in the situation is they are all in an arms race to get pilots. And if you are well-qualified, you're safe, you know what you're doing, you have as good of a shot as anybody to get one of these jobs, one of these highly sought after jobs. And now, instead of like we talked about in the beginning, where it was the first call is the one you take and you put the blinders on, you can actually choose where you want to go. If you are from Dallas, Fort Worth, and that's where you've always wanted to be, and United calls you, you no longer have to go, well, looks like I'm uprooting the family and we're moving to Newark. It's right. I know that in maybe a year, maybe two, I can come back to Dallas as my domicile and be there for the rest of my career and live where I grew up or live close to family. And that's where I'm going to be. Those days have not ever really been seen from my interactions with other pilots and just what I've seen historically studying wise. And that to me, those three things right there are three of many, but those are the big shifts in the way this current airline hiring trend is moving. And it should give a lot of folks a really kind of warm, fuzzy feeling inside that said, hey, this career is shifting in a direction that I can have a very high paying job, live exactly where I want to live, and fly for the airline I want to fly for and drive to work. And people don't understand, especially outside of the industry, that driving to work is not something the majority of folks do. Right. And if they can do that, oh my gosh, that's a game changer. I don't drive to work. I would love to be able to do it, but I don't. And the future is a lot of these younger individuals will be able to do it for the rest of their careers. And that is super cool.
Well, we can certainly see the, ALPA said for years, there's no pilot shortage. There's only a pay shortage. Mm-hmm. And I think that with the new contracts and things coming up, I mean, I'm certainly seeing in my social circle, people jumping out of other careers into aviation because they see what a great opportunity is. what do you see? And I know we're tight on time, but what do you see in terms of threats to the career, or some, maybe a blind spot with people that are jumping into the career right now in terms of movement in 5, 10, 20 years on the seniority list, just because there are so many young people getting into it right now. And just so that there isn't, you know, I wouldn't want to have anybody jump out of a career into aviation and then not realize that they might stagnate up a seniority list just because of the sheer age demographic that they're dealing with.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts there, and maybe on different airlines and the age demographics there?
Yeah. So the age demographic's an interesting one, right? Because like we've talked about, it's skewing younger. So if you're looking at it and you're a 50 something, and you want to move airlines, or you want to, or let's move it back a little bit, because a 50 something may not say all of a sudden I want to be an airline pilot.
Right.
Maybe somebody in their late 30s, if they get certificated and hired by 42, they're probably going to be junior to somebody who's in their 20s, and they're never going to, you can't leapfrog them. Right. That's never going to happen. That's not the way our industry works for the lion's share of the airlines and air carriers that are out there. The way I look at it as a blind spot is the upgrade potential at an airline is so fast at most of the airlines right now that if you have a chance to hold captain, you're going to be able to hold captain extremely junior. Like it's never happened in the industry. That's probably the most staggering part of what's happening in the airline industry. However, just because you upgraded to captain in your second year and you're making more money than you've ever seen in your life, that doesn't mean that's always going to be that way. And you should plan for that contingency more than anything else, in my opinion, because if we do have a black swan event, you are either A, at worst, going to move back in the seniority list, which maybe you're on the bottom of the list of that captain seat, so you don't have the opportunity to make premium or fly as much as you did. B, slightly worse, you may actually be bumped out of that captain seat to an FO seat and you take a giant pay decrease.
Yep.
Or worst, the worst possible scenario, you get furloughed and you can't go fly anymore and you have no other options. And if you're 28 years old and you have not had anything else in your life except for aviation, and that's all you've done, you are going to be struggling for a couple of months, maybe longer, maybe a year, maybe longer than that, to just figure out what you're going to do to put bread on the table for your family and figure out, okay, what's next? So I think the bigger you can have a reserve to lessen the blow is something that every single pilot should do, no matter where they are on the seniority list. But for those junior folks, it's not as golden handcuffs and perfect as it looks right now, because anything can change that. I think COVID opened our eyes to that again, because we haven't really had that since the 2008 recession. But the reality is there wasn't a lot of young junior guys getting hired right then. It was there wasn't these thousands of pilots being hired.
Right.
And I think that echo chamber of those young folks talking to each other could be a problem. Like, man, I'm making all this money. Look at this. It's like, whoa, time out. Listen to the older crowd. They know what they're talking about.
Right.
You know, the old adage of stay with your first wife, live in your FO house, all that stuff is great. But the reality is you should probably think about doing some of those things just to lessen the blow of what if the contingency actually becomes the reality. And I've done that, and I know other people who have who probably didn't think about it before. So to me, that's like the biggest blind spot in the younger generation with the airlines. As far as the hiring goes, I maybe the way the industry is going, all the technology that's coming out, I mean, who knows what AI is going to do? Who knows about automation? I mean, I think some of it's overblown. I think it's a nice news article to put out there. You read some of these reputable firms that release an article, and when you're as an aviator, you read it and you're like, yeah, you're missing like 95% of the story. I always say, I go, I'm not real worried until they change the actual infrastructure of the airports. That's like,
right.
You still can't pull an airplane up to a gate without a pilot in it. That's where
it's the autopilot on my car. You know, I was driving to the mountains this weekend, and it's like, it's not going to drive in the snow. And then, you know, I was thinking about the human factors behind it. I'm like, yeah, it'll drive in a really nice sunny climate on a barren, dry road. And then, so no one's ever going to be driving. And then the one time you have to drive is going to be in the mountains in the snow, and it's going to be awful, right? So like that's going to be, I think that's an interesting, that's a whole nother hour conversation.
But yeah, that's a different conversation. Yeah, for sure.
I wanted to pull on a thread though, that you said that talked about like, you know, putting money away or preparing, like being ready, like don't go buy all the fancy cars and airplanes and big captain houses, like just because things are going really well. You know, I think, you know, some very actionable things that I'm taking away from what you're saying is start making investments today when the sun is shining in the future for when the storm is coming. Cause I think that's basically our point is, you know, even, you know, I've been in the airlines 17 years. When I started, it was all bad. And it's like, we sort of like, it's been raining the whole time. Now the sun's finally starting to come out and everybody getting in is like, oh my God, that's amazing. Right. So I think now is the time to start thinking about the downside. And I think an investment you can make in yourself pays the best return.
Yes.
And so like by learning and, you know, growing, what are other people doing? How are they investing? You don't have to make any decisions, just go learn stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's why we wanted to launch this podcast, really, frankly, yep. is to bring the people that have the knowledge and the connections and the experience together to share that information with everybody.
Yep.
Definitely.
To double down on that, I would say invest in yourself. And then I brushed on this earlier, but developing the team around you, and whether that's your team of a sounding board, people who don't share necessarily the exact same opinions that you do, not necessarily just aviation professionals. I have people that are not related to aviation at all that I sound things off about my outside activities and investment style stuff in myself, as far as businesses that I do, those kind of things, like building the team. And Tate and I, we've talked a lot about this as far as real estate, is building a team around you in that community. For somebody who owns a couple of properties, like I have, you know, I've got my property manager, my realtor, tax guy, getting an attorney, working on stuff like that to build a team around me so I can make the right decision at the right time. I'm always hunting for the right deal in real estate. The thing is I don't want to feel like I'm just doing it because it's got to be done. Like I want to have those inputs to go, you know, you don't necessarily need to jump on everything right away. Just hold off, a little bit of patience, a little bit of understanding, due diligence, all that stuff. And I think when you invest in yourself, that's the first primary thing. It's kind of like you want to be diversified. So invest in yourself primarily. So whatever your primary investment would be for retirement or something like that, that would be you. But then you want to have these other things out there that help you get to that level as well. And that's where I put my team around me to make sure that I'm investing in them as well, because then I know that, all right, if I'm doing something wrong or my primary investment isn't working out the way I was hoping it would at that point, I can go and I can look at those other investments, my teammates, and say, all right, now we can shift here, do something different. And I can sort of supplement what I'm failing at my own investment. Cause I know that investment's going to come back at some time, but sometimes it's not perfect. And that's where I like the idea of having, yes, you invest in yourself, but then also your team around you is that diversification that you can go out and really tackle the things that you necessarily need to do later in life. And that might be passion projects, philanthropy, whatever it is, your family, you got to have that as well. You can't just be a lone wolf in this industry. As much as we are sometimes, you have to have that other aspect and that team aspect go and really crush it.
Well, Adam, love we that. Really appreciate you coming on, dropping all the knowledge. I appreciate what you do for TPN. If it's worth anything, keep up the good work. I know we all as business owners need to encourage each other.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of thankful 100%. Hours, I think less hours, blood, sweat, and tears. We're going to go ahead and wrap it up. And how can listeners get in touch with you? I know you mentioned the Pilot Network website. Is there any other channels that you prefer or social that you want to share?
So the easiest way is drop an email at heyguys@thepilotnetwork.com. That's HEYGUYS @thepilotnetwork.com. We have our socials, Instagram, Twitter. Those are more just educational shootout. We don't really use those as interactive ways to talk and interact yet. We're growing those a little bit. The Facebook group, message in there, will get seen by one of our moderators and move back to us. But the best way is just email is always, you know what's funny? The first thing that came out in technology or communication via the computer was email, and it's still the best way, in my opinion.
Still, yep.
It works almost all the time. So that's the easiest way. And then check us out at thepilotnetwork.com. And if you are in that market to go get hired, or you're in the market to network, meet new people, and have a great time, because it is a hell of a party, is the Pilot Network Expo Experience, whatever. The X stands for a whole bunch of different stuff. TPNX in Orlando, the April 21st and 22nd. And if you want to register, you go to pilotnetwork.com/TPNX, and all the information's right there. All the airlines coming, Southwest, American, Delta, United, JetBlue, Allegiant, Spirit, a bunch of the startups like Breeze and Avelo are going to be there as well. We're working on getting the affinity organizations like OBAP, Women in Aviation, PAPA, NGPA, LPA, all those folks to come and join us. And then our awesome vendors like Tate and Turbin, and then a couple other folks that are out there like Spitfire Elite, who do a great job helping out with interview prep and just bolstering your ability to communicate when you're in those situations. So for those of you who are interested, April 21st, 22nd, TPNX in Orlando, I'll be there, and I guarantee there'll be a drink or two on the house.
All right.
Yes. Yes.
Well, thank you, Adam.
My pleasure, guys. Really good luck, and love that you guys are ripping it up in the podcast world with how to make pilots understand that passive income is a actual reality, a way that you can do it.
It is. Adam Juhan, thank you so much for coming on. I'll see you in April.
See you then.
See you.